Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 494. Science Faction, your weekly corona update. The numbers are as follow for today, October 4th, 2020. Worldwide infected 35.3 million, U.S. infected 7.6 million. Worldwide dead around 1,040,500, U.S. dead 214,500. Again, as always, these numbers are all undoubtedly much higher in real life, but these are just the reported ones, the documented ones. All right, on to this week's articles. As you guys might imagine, this will be an interesting corona update because this one has some headline news. It is official, Donald Trump has contracted SARS-CoV-2 and now has COVID-19. Right now, as I am talking to you, this is Sunday the 4th, and the president has been in the hospital for a few days and has been receiving treatments, but all of the reports seem to say that he's doing quite well. Now, those of you who are listening to this will undoubtedly, just by the fact that it will be later, be in a world with more information, and maybe you guys will know, almost certainly you will know, exactly how badly this has affected the president. For all I know, I post this up Sunday night, somebody's listening to this Tuesday, and the guy's dead already. Very unlikely, but who knows. There are some indications that even though all the public word on his health is that it's good, that it might actually not be as good as they are trying to make it seem. So let's get into this. First off, we don't know exactly how or where he got infected, but it came to light when one of his aides, Hope Hicks, tested positive. He then later tested positive on Thursday of last week. Now, one quick aside is that I'm obviously a more left-leaning individual, and seeing my side go into the conspiracy theories on how he's not actually sick and whatnot is really disheartening. For those of us who thought, you know, coronavirus conspiracy theories were limited to the right or maybe the far, far fringes of the left, it turns out the broad general left can come up with stupid ass ideas too. So not sure why they think this would be a big deal and be great if he pretended to get it, but it's how much work it would take to make everyone around him look sick and all that, but seemingly nonsensical. So anyway, both the president and the first lady have tested positive for the virus. It should be noted that right off the bat, those are two very different things. She is a much younger woman than he is a man, and age is a big deal. He is in his 70s, so she is already much better off. She's obviously in much better health than him in terms of obesity and exercise and whatnot. And lastly, women tend to deal with this virus much better than men. So when we say both of them are sick, we are really talking very, very different numbers. It's like both of them are sick. I hope her cough isn't too bad and he might die. Now, when I say he might die, to be honest, that is always a possibility, obviously. But no matter how bad his case is, he has the best medical treatment on earth. And I find the idea that he will have a fatal version of it pretty unlikely. Again, you guys could be listening to this a week from now going, Bobby was a fucking idiot. The dude's dead. Here's what I'm saying. One, it got caught early. Most people do not get their infections caught nearly as early as he did, well before they're symptomatic. He got caught early because people around him got tested and they got caught. They got it and he had the resources and he got tested. And so he got it. So one, early knowledge of this is going to make a big difference. Number two, best medical treatment. What does he get? He gets things like intravenous remdesivir, which we've covered on the show before, is very, very effective, especially when used early. But guess what? Nobody else gets it early. Remdesivir is essentially used now for the most extreme cases, and then it can help a little bit. But we always say, hey, if they would have gotten it earlier, it would have knocked it right out. Well, he's getting remdesivir, again, an IV drug, so you can't just pick it up and get it from a pharmacy or something. It has to be administered in a hospital. He's getting it before even the onset of symptoms. So that's a really powerful drug that works way, way better when used early, used incredibly early. That's a really good sign that he is going to make it or pull through. He's also undergone the monoclonal antibody treatment we talked about before, where they're essentially taking the antibodies of people who have fought this off and injecting those antibodies into you, and that helps a lot. As a matter of fact, he ended up getting like a huge dose of the antibody treatment. So right now, the company that produces this antibody treatment advises 2.4 gram infusion. You want to know what he got? 8 grams. And we do think there are some cases where the more you take, the better. We haven't been giving out 8 grams to everybody because we would run out of antibodies 4 times faster. So we've kind of held that off. But again, this is the president of the United States. He's getting the best possible treatment. He's going to get that 8 grams along with the remdesivir, along with a steroid drug that they just announced they have him on today called dexamethasone, which we've talked about on this show before. Now, here's the thing. Here's the reading between the lines on all of this. The remdesivir, you could have called from a million miles away. I did, by the way. I called when, you know, I said, as soon as he gets sick, you better believe for all his hydroxychloroquine talk, he's going to be hooked up to remdesivir in a second. He was. That absolutely did happen. That anyone could have called. The antibody treatment, the monoclonal antibody treatment, totally could have called that. Probably would even call that he would take a bigger dose than his usual. Totally makes sense. But once you get into the steroids, that's actually a little bit of an interesting point because unlike the remdesivir and unlike the antibody treatments, which both don't really have big negative side effects, the steroids do. And the side effects can actually impact the disease you are sick with at the time, too. So it's not always positive. In fact, the higher doses of steroids tend to tamp down the immune system, which, as you can imagine, when you're fighting a virus, can be very bad. Now, if you're having like an overactive immune reaction and that's your problem, it could help. But you could see how you are kind of threading a needle here. The administration of those steroids usually is done in more extreme cases because the negative side effects are bad and potentially could make the disease much worse. So you only use it when you really, really need to. It is very interesting that they're claiming he is very healthy right now and yet still giving him this steroid. They've so far announced that he has had 2 spells in which his oxygen dipped below 95%, which you will see clinicians saying, like, this is a big deal, blah, blah, blah. In reality, okay, it's a big deal, kind of. We've now seen people with COVID-19 whose oxygen levels are way lower than we thought was even possible for them to be conscious, and they seem totally fine and stuff. So if with this particular disease and yada, 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 I don't know how big a deal that really is just because he dipped below, you know, 95%. But here's the thing. I really do believe, I think he will come out of this alive. He may have some long-term organ damage, but nobody will ever really know about that. But yeah, I think he will come out of this alive. And I think the downside is people won't see how bad it was. It won't necessarily be that bad for him because, again, IV remdesivir, boom, right off the bat, monoclonal antibody treatments, 8 grams of that motherfucker, give him the steroids, give him everything. So I think he's going to make it through. And I think the downside is now this is going to be talking points to the, you know, COVID deniers to be able to say, oh, look, see, look, this 75-year-old fat man got it and he's fine. Why is everybody complaining? And it would, and it's kind of like, you know, pointing out the son of the super rich person who got everything paid for and be like, look, this guy's a millionaire all on his own. It's weird how those two things converge. I'm just worried a little bit that this might end up being a very public case, maybe the world's most public case of the disease, of somebody of a very endangered and infirmed place, and his coming out on top will embolden those who believe it's not a real thing. Now, one question you might ask is how many people were actually infected by this cluster that included the president? We have no idea. We obviously know Hope Hicks brought it in, or at least we think she did, and the president and the first lady are both infected. So far, their other family members have tested negative. But again, there is a time frame of this in which you are infected but do not test positive. So we will see. Some journalists associated with some of the events that the president was involved with have also tested positive. Interestingly, the Republican National Chair, Ronna McDaney, tested positive. And the last time she was in direct contact with Trump was on Friday. Now, that could mean that both of them got infected at some event that happened on Friday. It's unlikely the president would have passed that on to her, given where he is in his state. We're pretty sure he, you know, got it a little bit later. But it might mean that this is floating around under the surface in the political areas of D.C., and the president was just like the tip of the iceberg that we see, but a lot of this stuff is going around below the surface, or it's just a coincidence, and she happened to have somebody in her family who had it unrelated to the president. In addition, Senator Mike Lee and John Jenkins, the president of Notre Dame, they both tested positive, and they were both at an event on Saturday with the president. And these are all public events, by the way, so who knows how many other people are there. On Thursday, supposedly before he knew he was sick, he went to a private fundraiser in New Jersey. He flew there, by the way. I would guess every one of the people on that airplane, captains, pilots, stewardesses, co-pilots, the guy who chalks the wheels, they're all sick, I'm guessing. So he goes to a private fundraiser in New Jersey. There's also 2 stops in Minnesota, one in Minneapolis, in which he does another fundraiser, in which a lot of those people are probably infected too. So if they're viral shedding, a lot of these people probably got infected. Now, that's a big if, right? We don't know at what point he went from just being infected to actually shedding the virus or those around him, because remember, he's not the only one there who's infected. But it could be that this campaign tour, you know, these places in Minneapolis and New Jersey and stuff might actually become super spreading clusters, which would be really crazy to be like, oh, yeah, you remember when grandma died because the president came? Now, a couple of side notes. When I say that he's most likely going to be fine because of all of these treatments, some things to remember. We already know that severity of the disease is not only associated with your risk factors in terms of age and health and gender, all of which he does not have good numbers for. But it's also dependent on the viral load with which you're infected. One of the reasons that it was hitting ER staff so hard is, you know, even if they were young and healthy, they were being exposed to so much virus, just huge viral loads, and their bodies couldn't fight it off. We don't know what the case is for Trump. The fact that it progressed quickly, even in spite of all of this treatment and stuff, maybe he did get exposed to a viral load, and it wouldn't be ridiculous to think if he's on a plane with infected people who are shedding and sitting in close quarters with them and doing debate prep and all that stuff, it's very possible he could have gotten a huge viral load. If that is the case, if he got a giant viral load, then it might be that the remdesivir and steroids and everything else were too late and that he could have get a very, very serious case. I'm just saying he is in the prime position of any person on Earth, and he's utilizing not his bullshit hydrochloroquine. Remember, he let that go the second he got sick, and he went right to the real stuff that works, the remdesivir and the monoclonal antibodies. It could be, even though my belief is that all that stuff will work and he will probably come out, he'll make it look like it wasn't nearly as bad as it actually was, and the catastrophe of this will be the way the rest of the world and people in his base interpret this, there is still a possibility that he could have a very, very bad case and die. That is absolutely a possibility, which would be really interesting. I wonder what the right would do in that sense. I wonder if all of a sudden this would start to be taken any more seriously. All right, on to article number 2. Kid COVID deaths weren't all kids. Remember we talked about that weird syndrome that some kids were getting that was a lot like Kawasaki disease. And it was an inflammatory issue that happened along multi-organ systems. And it was happening in certain kids who were affected with SARS-CoV-2. Well, it turns out that disease, which is still rare, by the way, this particular thing is much rarer than dying from the usual issues of the usual organ failure and stuff for SARS-CoV-2. So it was labeled MISC, multi-organ inflammatory syndrome, in children. Well, we have been starting to see it appear more and more in adults. A new study came out finally looking at MISA, or multi-system inflammatory syndrome, in adults. Now, again, there's not a lot of numbers on these people, so it's hard to even get any kind of real sample size, but they looked at 16 adult patients, 10 of which required hospitalization and 2 of which died. The numbers were small, but they seemed to have similar symptoms to the children, that everything from fever, abdominal pain, vomiting, diarrhea, neck pain, rash, bloodshot eyes, fatigue. In addition, they had some of their own symptoms that the children did not present with, including heart issues and chest pains. But what was really interesting in all of this was just basically a summary of the different cases and you know, it's happening in adults and this is what we need to look forward to. But what they mentioned is, both for adults and kids, testing them, some of them tested positive for SARS-CoV-2, but some of them tested negative, but positive for the antibodies, meaning that they had been infected by SARS-CoV-2, but no longer actively were at the time that their disease started to show. So what does that mean? This is certainly related to SARS-CoV-2, but maybe this isn't a symptom of COVID-19. Maybe this is the after effects of our body dealing with healing from the illness. It could be that maybe this multi-system organ failure is some kind of autoimmune disease where now these kids' immune systems have been messed up and they're attacking the organs. This may be something that is, you know, it's still rare in both kids and adults, but this condition might be something where it's a specific reaction of a very narrow set of circumstances from an immune system to this disease, where it ends up that the disease is gone, the virus is out of your body, but your immune system is still running hot and still going after stuff and going after your own organs. Very, very interesting. And since we spent so long on the Trump thing, I don't have time. I'll skip over really quickly. There were some interesting studies that showed some of the genes that make you more susceptible to COVID-19 or to bad cases of COVID-19 were actually directly inherited from Neanderthals and exist in high concentrations in places like Bangladesh And another story about the fact that one specific strain, which we had covered before, was so much more effective at infecting people that it essentially took over in the spring. And like, so one mutation that happened in the virus at some point created a much stronger version or more infectious version of the virus that then spread around the world and dominated the already established COVID strain, SARS-CoV-2 strains. I want to skip all that and go to another article I thought was really interesting. It flew under the radar. So this was published in a journal called MBio, and there's some evidence there that previous infections with the regular coronavirus that causes the common cold can confer some protection. Now, we've talked about this before. We've hypothesized this before. But basically, what we were doing is looking back and going, why is this person not nearly as sick as this person? And they went, well, I had a cold 4 weeks before. Did that help? And they're like, maybe. And that's how we've been doing. But this is a really interesting way. This time, they looked at the blood samples of 26 people who were recovering from mild to moderate COVID and 21 healthy people who had never gotten it. But they had blood samples on these people just from like regular medical checkups from anywhere between 6 to 10 years beforehand. The reason that's important is we know that SARS-CoV-2 was not around back then. So any blood sample from 6 to 10 years ago could have by definition never been exposed to SARS-CoV-2. So they looked at the blood there to try and find out how many memory B cells, that part of your immune system that remembers what to attack, and antibodies would go after the spike protein. That spike protein that's part of all coronaviruses, including this one. And what they found is that there was a reaction in a lot of these people who had, clearly this blood is old, it predates the existence of SARS-CoV-2, but their blood was able to recognize and deploy antibodies against it simply, I mean, I guess we're intuiting this, from having been infected with a cold, a common coronavirus earlier in their life. Really neat. Now, it'd be interesting to see why we don't see this effect in everybody, since almost everybody has had a cold. Maybe, you know, some of us don't keep the immune memory for very long. Maybe some of us are better at recognizing it when it comes in. Maybe immune systems are at different levels of health. Who knows? But a very interesting piece of the puzzle, because I would remind everybody, if we could find a way to make this virus, you know, we talk about a vaccine and hopefully that will come too. But if we could find a way where our individual bodies could tolerate it much better, where everybody had mild to no symptoms, well, then all of a sudden this wouldn't be nearly as big a deal, right? So if my almost 80-year-old parents can take a pill that makes their immune system recognize this thing because it's a regular coronavirus they've been infected with 1,000 times and take it out like it's a common cold and doesn't become a big deal, then as long as they don't pass it on to somebody else who doesn't have that advantage and it doesn't cause long-term damage in their body, then we're good. And so part of beating corona could be a vaccine or our social distancing or something, but part of it could also be figuring out why it doesn't hurt certain people and finding a way to make that true for everyone. I really like stories like that, because if we do find out, let's say tomorrow we found out, oh yeah, it turns out your immune system's able to recognize it. The reason so many people have no symptoms or mild symptoms is that they have previous infection with the coronavirus. It recognizes and infects it, but a lot of people's immune systems aren't able to do that because they don't have enough blank in their diet, which helps their immune cells reproduce old antibodies or something. If it's something as easy as that, then man, can we make massive improvements with just a little bit of knowledge? I really like those stories because it might be that one of these kind of hints at a, if not the answer, at least something that helps out in the next year or so as we figure everything out. All right, thank you so much for joining me for Science Faction 494, where you learned all about Donald Trump's COVID-19, how MISC became MISA, and how having been infected with the common cold may give you some protection against SARS-CoV-2. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back later this week for Science Faction 495.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.